Welcome to the Battle Buddy Podcast with Keith McKeever.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Battle Buddy Podcast. I'm your host, Keith McKeever. I've got Nick Valentine here, who is the CEO of a handful of companies, Sergeant Ritter Spirits, Operation Phantom Support, Veterans Be Real Podcast, Phantom Freelancing, Combat Boxes, and probably a handful of other things in the works. So welcome, Nick, to the show. Good to have you here. So go ahead and tell us a little bit about your story. You know, what, where you're from, what your military journey was, things like that.
Okay, where I'm from, that's a conflicting question because I was born at the Great Lakes Naval Hospital in Chicago, Illinois. My father was in the U.S. Navy. So I grew up all over the country. I lived in Hawaii. I lived in Florida. I lived in California. I lived in Philadelphia. I lived in Maine. I lived South Carolina, blah, blah. And then as my father was getting ready to retire, I graduated high school. We were in Maine. My dad's last duty station was in Maine, and I enlisted in the Army. And then as soon as he retired, a month later, 2 months later, I went in the Army. And then I did 20 years in the Army. So I moved around my whole life in the Army, too. This is the longest I've lived anywhere in my entire life. I got here at Fort Hood in 2005, and I've lived here ever since because when I retired, I just stayed here. So I'm like, I ain't moving no more. I'm done with it.
Because Texas is God's country, right?
Well, Texas is God's country, and they are all about some veterans and some military. So it's all about being supported and being, you know, and having some good people coming out for you doing some stuff. Yeah, there's a little Captain Crazies running around, but for the most part, you know what I'm saying, there are good people here in Texas. And my wife's from Texas, and both my kids were born here in Texas at Fort Hood. So I just figured, hey, I'll give them a chance to kind of live the life I never had, and I'll just provide that for them. So that's what we're doing, yeah.
Awesome. Well, that's the goal of, you know, having a family is providing that next generation the life that you didn't have and providing them something different. And you know, Texas is not a bad place to live.
No, it
sounds pretty appealing to me living here in Central Illinois where it's pretty bitterly cold out. So
yeah, it actually snowed here about a week ago, and we actually got to go outside and make a snowman with my kids. My kids were off the chain crazy. We were throwing snowball fights, you know, because there's like 8 inches of snow literally, but it was gone the next day.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah, but we had, it was wet snow too, so it was good for snowballs. And we made this giant snowman in our front yard. People were taking pictures. People were driving by stopping and waving because, you know, I grew up in Maine, Chicago. So I grew up in a lot of cold weather. So I know how to make snowmen. So we're building the snowmen and having a good time, putting hats on them and scarves and all kinds of stuff. So we had a good time, but it was a good family time, that's for sure.
Oh, I'm sure they were just absolutely amazed when they saw it snowing. And
yeah, my youngest son was like 9 years old, never seen snow, you know.
And he's
like,
yeah, that's got to be a crazy crazy feeling, because I'm the same way, you know, growing up here in Central Illinois, snow's a thing. I haven't had a good wet snow in a while, though, and my kids are old enough now that I can have snowball fights with them and not worry about hurting them too bad.
That's the other thing, too. See, I was born in Chicago, so I'm a huge Cubs fan, Bears fan, Bulls, you know. Those are my teams. Like, I got Walter Payton's autograph and all kind of – I mean, all here on the right-hand side of my desk is all my Bears stuff, and on this side is all my Cubs stuff, and I got all – because I'm a huge sports guy. So, I mean, on that wall, I got my picture of the World Series win and all that stuff, but yeah.
I'm sure being a sports fan, I'm sure, you know, it's painful to have the Bears lose in the playoffs, but you're probably pretty happy to lose Mitchell Trubisky.
I don't know, man. I'll be honest with you. I don't think Trubisky's the problem. I think Nagy, in my opinion, I think Nagy was trying to overstep his abilities. He wasn't really playing to Trubisky's strengths. I mean, if you trade up, give up a pick and trade up to get this guy you thought is better than Mahomes and better than Watson and better than – then he has the talent. They evaluated him, and other organizations saw Trubisky as that time and talent too. That's why the Bears traded up to make sure they got him.
Yeah, somebody else was probably jockeying for that position.
Right. So I don't think Trubisky's a bad quarterback. I think you have to play to different quarterback strengths. You know, he's better at scrambling out of the pocket and moving. He's not good at staying stationary like a Tom Brady or whatever. He's got to run around and throw the ball and let his athleticism be his benefit. Because look at it. He was 6-3 this year when he started. You know what I mean?
Good point, yeah.
Bulls was 2-1. So it wasn't that Trubisky was the problem. It was the play calling. And I think what really helped the Bears is when Nagy gave up play calling duties and let somebody else do it, Nagy could focus on just being the coach and the strategy of the game versus having to worry about every single individual offensive play. And he could focus on the team. And I think it's going to – I hope what the Bears do is sign Trubisky to another one-year contract for next year. Or I hope that the Bears make a huge offer to the Houston Texans to get Watson. Sign Trubisky to a contract, trade Trubisky to Houston, plus give up, if you do like I did like the Mac deal, give up 3 or 4 first-round picks, but get that quarterback that's going to be the changing thing for our franchise.
Yeah.
You stop and think about it. Back in 2006 when they drafted Aaron Rodgers, the Packers drafted Aaron Rodgers at like number 25.
And I know, like that.
And I know we had the pick before 25, and think about what the Bears have done with Aaron Rodgers as our quarterback. You see what I'm saying? Because those quarterbacks in the NFL, your quarterback, and I know we're way talking off track here, but in the NFL, quarterbacks is what make and break your organization, because it's how they perform under pressure, how they perform, and then how they motivate their team. That's why Patrick Mahomes is so well, because he's a guy that can stay in the pocket and throw it 100 yards, or he can scramble and make a play somehow. Same thing with Watson. Watson can stay in the pocket or scramble. Lamar Jackson can stay in the pocket or he can scramble. So, I mean, there's a lot of potential out there for those quarterbacks that are more mobile, now, especially in today's NFL. It's not like that ground and pound like it was in the 80s with the Bears, with just give it to Walter Payton.
Yeah. And
you know, Jimmy Man would throw in deep every once in a while, but for the most part, here you go, Walter. And Walter did what he did. You know? So it's not like that anymore. So you got to find that sports teams are a little challenging, but yeah.
Yeah, I was going to ask, because I'm a Denver Broncos fan. I've been a Broncos fan for years, and it's been a rough 5 years. But I've seen the reports that the Broncos were possibly linked, you know.
Oh, no, there's like 20
all the rumors, like bringing in Trubisky, and I'm like, he's about on the same level as Drew Locke. You know, he needs to use his athleticism. I think they just need to put the tools around him. They need to be healthy.
And I like Locke. I think Locke's good. I think, again, teams that struggle like the Bears and the Broncos this year, it's not because of their quarterback play. It wasn't really because of their quarterback play. It's because their offensive line is not good enough at pass blocking. All these offensive lines are good at run blocking or, you know, run, because they get to just get off the ball and go. But when they got to back up and pass block, a lot of those guys struggle. And like I tell everybody to talk to you, that's why the Cowboys were so good for so long, because their offensive line was dominant. That's why the Steelers are always good, because their offensive line is dominant. And they can protect Ben Roethlisberger. If you can protect your quarterback, you can win games. If you can give your quarterback 3 to 5 seconds to make a decision, you'll win. But see, most quarterbacks only get 2.5 seconds, and they're not going to make the right decision. So it's crazy. Yeah.
Poor Cowboys fans.
I think Locke has got a huge upside to his side if he can get an offensive line that can protect him. He's got to get a good left tackle, and both his center and two guards got to be strong, or they're not going to be – no team. It's like the Bears. Bears ain't going to do nothing without an offensive line. I don't care who the quarterback is. If he can't protect him, he ain't going to do nothing back there. So, yeah.
Absolutely. It's every position is important, just like in the military. A quarterback, yeah, they have to have the talent and the ability, but it's also the glue that holds everything together. They touch the ball on every play. They're the one leading everything. They're setting the tempo along with the coaches. So, you know, it's an important step. But you know, the offensive line is kind of like your the young privates out there. They're the ones doing the dirty work. They're getting stuff done. And if you're not taking care of them and putting the right talent there and grooming them right, they're going to let you down some way. They're going to do something stupid in the barracks.
the hardest thing for me as a Bears fan is we 2006, we made it to the Super Bowl against the Colts. We had to kick off. Devin Hester ran the kickoff back for a touchdown. I'm thinking, okay, this is it. We're good. And then Peyton Manning had did his thing, you know, saying just what it is, what it is. But, you know, it's been a while for us to get some foundation stuff. I thought getting Mac was huge. But, again, if your offensive line isn't good, your team's not going to make it. Because even if your defense is amazing, and you're number one defense, you still got to put points on the board. You know what I'm saying? In the end, you got to put points on the board. So,
Very rarely do you see a defense that just overwhelms an opponent. And the Broncos did that in Super Bowl 50. I mean, they were able to stop Cam Newton, probably because their offensive line wasn't all that super great. So, but back to the military thing. So you were in a medical career field, right?
Yeah, I was a medic. I started off as a combat engineer. I got hurt. Reclassed to be a medic, and then they actually specialized me in mental health for a while. So I did both mental health and medic. But I did 17 years as a mental health medic guy, and then 3 years as a combat engineer. Was the first sergeant in the whole nine yards in the Army. You know, did all those jobs. Retired in 2010 after 20 years and 6 deployments. I decided that was enough, and I got out and decided to be home with my family. And then I decided to start a nonprofit to kind of pay it forward and help the soldiers who are still serving, and then look out for the veterans that have gotten out that might be struggling a little bit. And that's kind of what I do now.
Was that experience in that medical career field and was it a combat stress unit stuff that you were in? Yeah. Is that really what was the catalyst to starting a nonprofit and giving back, seeing the struggle that people were going through?
Well, yeah, that and just the injuries, because I ran 8 stations when I was in Afghanistan. I was the mental health guy there too, but you know, in theater, to be bluntly honest, we saw some people for mental health, but it was really more they just needed a psychological mental break, and they just wanted to come talk to somebody. It wasn't like it was going to get them out of assignment. Or we had a few soldiers that were, you know, dramatic and wanted to get out of stuff. But for the most part, most of those guys came to us to just kind of get away from their unit for an hour or two and just kind of relax. Because a lot of them, we would let them just sit in the room and just chill and watch TV if that's what they wanted to do, because they just needed a psychological break away from their unit. So I wouldn't say the mental health side made me get into the nonprofit world. I think more the physical challenge of what soldiers go through. When I had a guy lose a leg, or a guy lose both legs, or a guy lose an arm, or and I saw what the struggles they were going through to rehab to get better, and then what the struggles were going to be for them now to be actually semi-normal back on their lifestyle with their families and how they were going to survive and take care of their families. So I wanted to be there for those guys too. I mean, yeah, granted, don't get me wrong. I work with people all the time that have suicidal ideations. I have PTSD myself, and I deal with a lot of that myself because of the guilt I feel and all that stuff. But there's a lot of organizations out there that do particularly mental health stuff. So I don't really get involved in that. I do direct people to organizations that help them with that kind of stuff. But I don't, just because I did in the Army, and I'm just kind of like, yeah, you know, that's not where I want to be in my civilian life and my regular life. I want to kind of be helping people and making, I want to go home feeling good that I help a lot of people today. So I don't, not that I'm not trying to help that person with mental health issues, but I do get them to people who can help them and get them in the right organizations. I work with the different organizations that help them. So that's what's good about it.
Yeah, there's only so much you can do in a day, week, month, whatever. You gotta pick what you can do the most impact on. So I can understand that. You know, if somebody else is better suited because they're a doctor, they got the certifications, what they need to be the ones to handle it. You know, handle what you can handle.
I specialize in that shit. That's who needs to help them, not me. I mean, that's not my forte anymore. So, granted, absolutely. I was really good at it, and I did it for a long time, and I was sought after by a lot of colonels and lieutenant colonels and doctors that worked with me because they knew I could handle the other side of it for them. But in the long run, you know, it's not something I don't enjoy doing it. So, I mean, it just wasn't, I mean, yeah, I love helping the soldiers, but in the end, all the rules and regulations and all of this other bullshit, it's not worth it to me. So I just decided to go a different route. Yeah.
I'd imagine that being pretty tough to sit there and have to hear people's stories. And, cause you've got to take that on yourself mentally when you're hearing their stories and their impact. And going back to the war on terror, I had heard somewhere, I can't recall where it was, but there's a big difference between wars of past and today. In a lot of past wars, you'd be out on the front for maybe go out on a patrol. You maybe be out on the front for a few weeks, maybe a month or two. And then you come back to a fairly secure rear area, and you could let your guard down a little bit and then go back out, rotate back out. But on the war on terror, you're at these small fobs, you know, you're on constant patrols and all these things, and every single person around you is a potential threat. So you're constantly on guard, and you have really no great ways to really let that guard down. So there's a lot of mental health stuff there, and hopefully we can all work together as veterans to kind of end that stigma and let people get the help they need.
Well, here's what I tell you, any veteran out there that's listening to your podcast, the biggest thing you can do for anybody struggling with mental health issues, PTSD, whatever, is just be there. Just be there and be a sounding board, and don't judge them, and just listen to them, man. You don't have to judge them. You don't have to second guess them. You don't have to critique them. Just listen to them, because most guys that are struggling with PTSD or depression just need to get that shit off their chest. And as long as they can get it off their chest and not feel like they're being judged by the person listening, it's going to help that person. It might not help them in a diagnostic way, mental health-wise or medically, but it's going to help them because the stress and the relief is going to come off them that they could talk to somebody about it, and they didn't judge them. They didn't look at them different. They didn't. Because I've had soldiers sit across me and say, man, we got in a gunfight, and I killed a kid. And I didn't realize. And I just said this, well, you know, okay. And it happened, man. It was in the middle of a gunfight. No one's going to judge you for that, man. I mean, to get out a gun and you're shooting at you, you know, you did what you had to do to survive to come home to your family. No one's judging. And he was just like, at the end of that conversation, he was like, man, I can't believe you did. No, I don't care. I mean, I was in the same situation or whatever, blah, blah, blah. Boom. But it's not about my situation is worse than yours or this and that. It's just about listening to your battle buddy and listening to him and say, listen, I'm here for you, man. Let's get it off your chest, whatever you got to say, and I'll just listen. And that's the most important thing we as veterans can do for each other is just sometimes we just got to listen. Sometimes we just got to shut up and listen and just absorb it for them. Hear it, and then just give him a hug at the end and say, hey, man, I'll see you tomorrow. Let's go get another drink of beer tomorrow, whatever. And that way you're pushing the reinforcement of let's see each other tomorrow so he feels safe or she feels safe. So that's what it's about. It's not about solving their problem. It's about just being there to listen to them and hear them out. That's it.
Yeah, or call them during this time, you know, with COVID, or you're geographically separated. I had a conversation with an old friend of mine and not too long ago, honestly. And this year has been rough in certain ways for me. And I started – stop talking to a counselor myself. And so I was talking to my buddy not too long ago, and he recently, last fall, lost his wife to COVID. And so I was talking to him and, you know, trying to check in on him, just like that TV does at the end of every episode, pick up the phone and call somebody. Yeah. And so I finally, I picked up the phone and, we ended up talking and I told him that. And he goes, dude, 13 years later, he goes, man, you should have talked to somebody before. Don't bottle that stuff up. Go talk to somebody. Let that stuff out. Get the help you need.
Yeah, the most important thing to have PTSD is to talk to people about it. Doesn't matter who it is. You can be a bum on a street, on a car. Don't matter. Even if you ain't listening, just talk. Because it's about getting it off your chest. It's about just getting it out and getting out of your head and getting out. Let your words project that out of your body so you can feel like you kind of release it. Like all that comes off your shoulders, you can feel a little bit less stress. That's what it's really about. At least from my perspective, with my PTSD, that's the biggest thing for me. I talked to my wife about it. And there was a time I couldn't talk to my wife about all the little things that happened to me, all the combat I was in, all the conflict. But I got to a point where I was like, my wife's got to know who I am. She's got to know everything about me. She's my partner, right? So then I started opening up. And it kind of made her uneasy in the beginning because it was like, wow, I didn't think that's something you would ever do. But I'm like, that's because you weren't in that environment. It wasn't that it was a mental choice that I make to do it. It was reactionary or whatever. But now she's absorbed that understanding. It doesn't change the person that I am. It just was the actions I had to take in that situation. And I think that's why I tell therapists all the time too. Stop trying to think you have the answer. PTSD is not something you can fix. It's a condition that we have to live with for the rest of our lives. It's nothing you can fix. I can't fix it. You can't fix it. Because those thoughts are going to be in my head forever, no matter what you tell me. I don't give a shit what you think you can tell me. It's never going to go away. I have to learn to deal with the condition I have, which is figuring out what my triggers are, understanding how to control my triggers so I don't explode or go. That's what's important for you to teach me, how to control my trigger, how to control the anger, how to control the emotions that are coming out of me. That's what I need you to teach me how to do, not fix the PTSD. I need you to fix what happens when I go through an episode. That's what I need you to fix. What I tell people all the time. Stop trying to think you got the answer. No one has the answers to this.
That's what I realized this year is that I was more in my mind with being at home more and all these things going on with COVID. And I realized I was thinking about things way more than I ever really thought. I keep myself busy, always going, all these different things going on. And when those things kind of slowed down a little bit, I thought about it. And then I was thinking about it. And I've been very open with my wife about things that I've gone through. And I'm like, man, to somebody who hasn't been through those experiences, some of this stuff sounds absolutely crazy. And I thought it was just kind of normal because I experienced it. I knew I had battle buddies around that experienced the same thing. We all went through it. You kind of think that you're normal. And then when you start thinking about it, you're like, that wasn't a normal experience. Most people don't go through that. So that's when I finally said, you know what, I'm just going to talk to somebody and get this stuff off my chest and talk to a counselor about things that I've done and seen and experienced. And Just talking's helped. I've only talked to her twice. So, just to be able to act. And I realized, some of the ways I, react to different things are 0 to 60 in a fraction of a second. She's like, breathe.
PTSD is a volatile condition because you could have a good day. I could be having a great day. And then all of a sudden one sound, one smell, one whatever could trigger something. And then I go from 0 to 100 in like seconds. And that's what used to scare my wife and my kids. One day I'd be fine. All of a sudden, boom, there'd be a noise or a sound on the TV or a smell I was smelling, and it would set me off. And I'd like, so what I've learned, though, going to different retreats and different things to help me is that if I can control the trigger, I can control the outcome. So once I start to feel that trigger coming on, now I have ways to tell myself, take a breath, slow down, do whatever, blah, blah. And it does. It keeps me under control now. So that's what I tell people all the time. You can't stop PTSD from being a part of your life, but you can learn to control the outcomes of the PTSD. You can't control it, but you control the outcomes of your actions. And that's why I tell people, that's what you got to focus on, the positives of what you can do to control it. Because once you learn that, your life will get better with your family because they'll understand you better. Plus, you'll learn to know that your family can trust you, and then it's not going to feel like they're going to be on eggshells when they're walking around. So that's what it's about.
Yeah, and I had to realize the hard way that, everybody's triggers are different. Everybody's response is different. Mm-hmm. I never really thought, PTSD. I don't really have any PTSD. And my wife for years was like, "You've got PTSD," and I'm like, "Nah." And this year really made me realize. I'm like, I don't have that stereotypical punch holes in the wall and slap people around like the stuff that you see in TV. It's just
that's
everyday PTSD for everybody's gonna be different. But that's what I was thinking in my head. Like, nope. That's somebody with PTSD. They're failing to adapt. They can't do things. They can't focus on things. Well, I get hyper-focused on things. I bury myself in work, and I do things. But I also know that I've got a short temper sometimes. Sometimes if I'm focused, hyper-focused on something and somebody tries to break my attention, it will send me into like a mini rage. And I'm like, I'm focused and you're breaking my attention. I'm 100% into this. And the first thing the counselor told me when I told her that is, wait 4 seconds. Just count 4 seconds before you say anything or do anything. And it will all drastically alter your response and the impact. So, you know, that like close my office door when I'm working so my kids don't come in here and bother me so I can maintain a focus without somebody coming up behind me and bugging me for a hug or bugging me for snack time or asking for some math help, homework help. You know, not that I don't want to help, but to me, there's got to be a time for it. I want to be able to devote my full attention instead of being distracted with what's going on. So, but that's enough on the mental health stuff here. We go down a long rabbit hole on that. Yeah. But your Operation Phantom Support is a nonprofit that you started when you got out. Yep. So what kind of things can you tell us that you're trying to achieve and accomplish and have accomplished with that?
Well, the biggest thing for me and the reason we started Operation Phantom Support is to help soldiers and veterans and their families with day-to-day living assistance. So we primarily help with things that happen day-to-day. We make sure their families have enough food on the table. They got clothes. They got furniture. They can get their car fixed. They can get their tires replaced. They can get birthday cakes for their kids, Christmas toys, backpacks for school for their kids. So we came up with a lot of programs that just kind of impact their lives throughout the year. That they're going to run into a birthday. They're going to run into Christmas. They're going to run into a school. Their car might break down. They might need to get extra food this month. They might need tires or they might need to get their car. So that's what we focus on is primarily things that we can do to help these soldiers save money throughout the year, make their lives a little easier, or the veterans, and make their families have more so they don't have to worry as much so they can be at work and have a clear head, be at work, focus on their work, and then get home to their families and just be home with their families and not have to worry about, do I have enough food on the table for my family tonight for dinner? So that's what we kind of do to help them out.
Yeah, after talking to you before we started recording, I got the feeling that it's really kind of a crisis aversion kind of thing. It's kind of like a mini emergency. You're filling that gap so that something doesn't escalate into a major issue. You know, if you fix the tire on the car, they could keep driving. If they don't have the money for it, then they're skipping work. They're not coming in. They're getting an Article 15, you know, whatever case happens.
It can escalate a whole lot of other problems just because they couldn't do X, Y, or Z. And that's what I do. Like I get units that call, first arms that call me all the time. Hey, I got a soldier down there. Got a no pay due, whatever, needs some food. Yep, send them over top. I got them. I'll make sure you got all enough food to get all the way to next payday. I'll make sure you squared away. And that's what we do. So it's about being there for the leadership on Fort Hood because we're right outside the gates of Fort Hood here in Texas. And then also to take care of the veterans that are struggling. So it's really about like that gap fill to just make sure that we can get them to that next level. They get them to the next payday. We can get them to this and they're going to be okay. And that's what we kind of wanted to do because most soldiers put paycheck to paycheck. Because they don't have the financial background or they don't have the financial knowledge to really make sure they're saving and doing. So they live paycheck to paycheck. So I'm helping them spread that out a little bit more. Because if they come to my food pantry, they get about $300-$400 worth of food every month. So that helps them. Their grocery bill was $300. Now they can cut it down to $100 because they got $300 worth. So now they can start looking at putting money away or having a little bit of money to stretch a little further or whatever. So that's what we're trying to accomplish for them in the end.
Put in that thrift savings plan or right. Put it back to save for that next emergency, because we all know in life you're going to have that next that next emergency that comes up where you're going to have to fork out $500,000 for something you didn't expect.
And I tell them all the time, as soon as you get this check from the government, that stipend check, something's going to come up and it's going to eat all that money up. Or car's going to break into something. It's always the way it works, man. You get into money all of a sudden, then a problem happens. You got to fix your toilet or you got to fix your refrigerator breaks or whatever. And you got to spend money on that anyway. So I tell them all the time, when you get this check in the mail, don't go spend it all too fast. You might want to put it in savings for at least a month or two. Just as a way to see if anything happens. And if not, then you got it. You guys can do whatever. But don't just spend that money the minute you get it because something's going to come up. It always does. It's just Newton's law. Something's going to happen to you. You know.
Yeah, that's a great point. Just sit on it for a little while. Assess the situation.
Yeah.
Is there something you need?
When me and the wife got ours, we sat on it for a month and a half before we did anything just in case.
And there then
when our washing machine went out, so I had to buy new washing machines. But I had the money because I didn't spend it all right away, so we wouldn't bother them. But that's my point. You just never know. So, yeah.
I bet that was a pain in the butt. I just got a new washing machine about a month ago, and I got that a lot faster than I got my stove, but that's a whole different story. I've been waiting 6 months for a stove.
Yep.
The top works, but the oven doesn't work. So we, side note on that, we cooked Thanksgiving dinner in an air fryer and a smoker. we made it work. If you cross my fingers, the stove gets here by the end of the month. I'm missing a frozen pizza. I haven't had frozen pizza in a while. It's just not the same on a grill, and can't cook it in a smoker or an air fryer. But you know, some of that financial stuff, you're filling in some of those gaps too. By you've got a guy that comes in and does seminars and talks to people about fixing their credit and financial stuff. So what's he doing for the guys there?
Well, the biggest thing is, like we talked about before we started recording, a lot of young soldiers, when they come in, they don't really have a big financial background. A lot of soldiers that come in from broken families or issues, and that's why they come in the military, to kind of get away from that life. Or they come from low-income families or income or families that didn't have it. There are some kids that come in that have families that have money and all that stuff, but for the most part, we all know the higher percentage of people that come in the military are family guys that were struggling or couldn't go to college or whatever. So they don't have a mental, they don't have a financial background. So this guy comes in, his name's Billy, he works with me, he's a friend of mine. The class costs $25, but it's a donation to all of the charity. So it doesn't, he doesn't even take any pay, he just donates it straight to me. And then he teaches them how to build their credit, fix their credit, understand what interest rates are and how to work them. So when they go buy a car, whatever, and the guy tells them, oh, 17% interest, the guy can go, whoa, 17%, you know what I'm saying? Right now, it should be in that 5 to 8 range. You know, but why am I paying? And he'll say, oh, because your credit score. And then you go look at your credit score. And then he teaches them how to look at his credit score, how to look it up, how to fight things in your credit if you need to. He teaches them all that stuff. So it just gives them more tools in their toolbox, the way I look at it, to understand that they now have the ability to manage and maintain their financial future because of what he teaches them. And like I told you earlier, I had one kid come in, his scores in the 400s, and in 6 months, it went up to like 600. Because he taught him the right way to run his credit, to use the credit, and he started doing it, and his credit score started going up because the credit bureau started seeing that he's using the credit the right way. So they started bending, his points went up. Boom. So, and that's one of our success stories. That kid actually comes to the class now because he came here as a P2. Now he's an E4, but he comes in here. So if I wouldn't have came to this class, I probably would have been in worse shape than I was. Now I have a car. Yeah. I have a car that's already paid off. And he went through this whole thing that he's learned about. And he said all it was an hour class. I sat in here with him, and then I just followed up with him 2 or 3 more times because that's what Billy does. He lets you reach out to him if you need to. Once you take his class, you have access to him. He said I reached out to him 2 or 3 more times, and all of a sudden my path started jumping up. My credit score was going up, and then I got a car. I was able to do this because my credit score was up high enough I could get a car now. But and my life changed because of Billy. And he comes in and talks to these kids all the time, and they're like, what? So it has a real big impact around here because – a lot of leaders around here don't have the time to sit on their soldiers and teach them the mechanics of finances. They don't have that time. And then no soldier wants to go to a class and sit through that shit. But if he can voluntarily do it and come in on his own time, or we work around his schedule, they're more likely to come in and do it. That's what we set it up that way.
Yeah. Are you finding that you get young guys and gals that come up and they take it, and as they become supervisors, that they're recommending and bringing their troops? I'm sure you're finding that probably happening quite a bit more.
Well, that's what I teach them, because that's part of my part of the class. I come in and say, now listen, now when you guys get this education, your responsibility to now your new privates that come into your unit or new soldiers that PCS in, is you talk to them about how they're doing with their finances. And if not, recommend this course, and or you can sit down with them now and show them what you've learned so they're better prepared to be here at Fort Hood and deal with the things that happen here or whatever. So it's your responsibility as a soldier as you get promoted to train the person behind you to know what you know. And knowing this now, it's a huge responsibility of those new soldiers coming in, because you can prepare them to be successful financially while they're in the military. Because this kid that also came in, he's set up for if he does 20 years in the Army, by the time he retires, he's going to have like $600,000 in his IRA, blah, 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 because he's been putting money slowly away and it's building up for him. And it's projected to be at whatever number it is. When he gets to 20 years in the Army, he'll have a whole bunch of money when he gets out that he's not missing right now. And that's what I tell him. If you don't pay yourself first in the military before you do anything with your money, I don't care if it's put $50 in a savings account, but if you don't do that every month when you get paid or every paycheck, you don't do that first, why are you doing anything? Because if you're not paying yourself, but you're paying all your bills, you're paying this and that, and then you're spending money at restaurants, but you didn't pay yourself for doing your job and being a good human being and being a good person, what are you doing? So think about it that way. Your first bill is to yourself. You owe yourself $50 a month to put in savings. $50 a month for a whole year is $600. $600
times, not much.
$600 times 20 years is a lot of money. And then I said, if you do it right, every time you get promoted, you add $10 to what you deposit. So when you make E2D3, now you put 60. When you make E3D4, you put 70. E45, you put 80. E5D6, you put 90. E67, you put 100. And if you start doing that over the next 20 years, by the time you get out, you're going to have enough money that you don't have to work at all. You can retire. But
it's not like it's difficult to set up. You kind of set it up once. And like you say, when you get that promotion, just go in there and bump that value up.
All you got to do is set up an alarm or do it right on your own checking account. Just say, hey, it's going into my savings. Then don't touch your savings. If you run into an issue or an emergency, that's when you have other organizations to come help you, or AER or whatever. But don't touch that. The whole point is that's for your future, not for your now. Even if there's an emergency, that's still for your future. Try to stay away from that if you can. And that's why I tell the guys all the time. And that kid, he does come in and does classes with Billy now all the time. He helps out because he's a walking model of what we did. And he's he shows off what he's going to have when he gets out. He's always excited about it, how much he's going to have in his account. So he's, you know.
Well, that's huge. Walking, talking advertisement for the success of the program.
He's a walking poster child for us, yeah. Good guy.
Awesome.
He's a good kid, too. Smart, too. So, yeah.
Well, it must be smart to finally realize they needed to come get the class and get the education and get on that path. So,
and that's what I tell my time is because you were smart enough to at least check into this and see what it was about. And then when you got into it, you're like, oh, yeah, this could help me. And then you realize that and you stuck with it and you follow through. Now look where you're going to be at in 20 years. You know what I'm saying? So you're going to be set. So, yeah. I said, I wish somebody had done that for me because nobody did that for me either. You know what I mean? And I learned it a little bit later on in my career, which is kind of too late. I learned it at like my 15th or 16th year is when I started really getting involved in finance because I looked at my shit and go, oh, man, I'm not going to – when I retire, 50% of this is not that much money. You know what I mean? Like I make about $1,700 a month in my retirement check. That's not a lot of money. That's enough to pay my mortgage basically, but doesn't pay any of my other bills. You know what I'm saying? Blah, blah,
yeah.
I have a VA disability and all that stuff that helps out with some of that. You know what I mean? But the point is, I thought 50% of my retirement, I'm good. You know, I'll be good. No, sorry. 50% of just your base pay is not that much. Not what you make in a month. It's just your base pay, not your separate rats and your BAH and all that. It's just what you make. So it's not what you think it is. So, and then, you know, I make less than what a E3 makes, you know, in retirement. And that's sad, but that's what I make. But it is, and that's why I told this kid, I said, you're going to be set up for life now, man, because you listen to Bill and you're doing this. So it's great. And I'm happy for you. So go for it. You know? That's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. That's something I never got either. I never really had anybody sit me down. I was knowledgeable enough to know, you know, hey, I'm going to get X amount of money per month, not to overspend. I knew credit cards were bad. I knew the interest rates were terrible on them. Obviously, I know when I was in the mid-2000s, payday loans were the huge thing, you know, and then they outlawed payday loans. Don't go get them. You know, the 300-400% interest on those. Those were quite the popular thing at the time to try and get people to stop doing. But, yeah, that education, that gap fails because either the supervisor doesn't know or is unwilling to learn. There's no, you know, a lot of places there's no resources. Thank goodness there they've got some resources where they can learn that. But I guarantee you that there's other installations and across all the branches that just don't have any infrastructure like that. And I don't think that's a difficult thing to really set up. And I know no movers and shakers in the Pentagon are going to listen to this, but they should do something about it. You should take care of your troops at every single level. And that should be something I think should be maybe an extra class when you come in. I was Air Force, so you had the first term Airman Center shortly after you come in where you learn basics of what's available to you. That should be part of it. Should have a full day, 2-3 days of financial education.
Yeah.
Talking about Air Force budget, stuff like that. Like hit them young because almost everybody comes in is 18 to 22-ish.
Yep.
Most people don't know anything about funds. I mean, you go from a part-time job in high school to all of a sudden the government's going to give you X amount of money and
yeah, full medical coverage, dental, all of a sudden you're like, what? So you don't even know either.
Yeah. Then you got to be prepared for retirement too. Retirement or getting out. And then you got to go get your own health insurance and all those other things that you didn't have to worry about for the last 4 years, 10 years, 20 years. Yep. So now you got to figure that in your budget too. So definitely some good stuff that, like I said, doubt anybody in the Pentagon's ever going to listen to this, but if they do, I'm telling you, yeah, get a plan going. That's taking care of your people. And that's less of an, it helps veterans too, because they're eventually going to get out. And if they're financially savvy, then they don't need the resources. It's less on the nonprofits to have to do. They can focus their attention on helping other people. So other things you've got going on, I'll let you talk a little bit about, you got Sergeant Ritter Spirits and you got Combat Boxes.
Yep.
So tell us a little bit about those two companies.
All right. Well, Sergeant Ritter Spirits is a company I started. I carry my own brand of liquor. I have vodka, whiskey, bourbon, and I'm getting ready to introduce rum and tequila here pretty soon. And that's just to raise money for my nonprofit, really. I built it specifically. All the profits I make in that company after I pay my employees, all the money comes to the nonprofit. So it was just another way for me to help funnel money into my nonprofit so I don't have to keep going out and ask a business donations and whatnot. So it's another way that I can drive some money into our nonprofit. I also have a coffee brand inside there called Good Morning Sergeant Coffee that's in my liquor company, but we carry a coffee brand too that we sell it to a lot of restaurants in the area here and stuff like that. So we make some money off the coffee too. Combat Boxes. Now, Combat Boxes is a new venture I got into in November. And what I did there was, as a veteran and in a lot of the veteran groups I'm in on Facebook and stuff, I've noticed that a lot of veterans have products that they sell. And a lot of them have struggling times selling enough product to make enough money, blah, blah, blah. So I thought, you know, my wife and daughters get this subscription box every month of makeup, you know, blah. I said, man, what if we do something where I started a company where all the products in that subscription box come from better known businesses to help get their product in the hands of people so they can go want to check out their websites or maybe make some purchases, maybe give them a discount code to go buy some products. We can start driving some people that are military and veteran supporters to go to some of these businesses to help them out. So I said, you know what? I can come up with a reason. So then I started thinking of names. I had different names in my mind at first, but then I'm like, you know, Combat Box. Because a lot of us went to combat or were in the military while we were at war. So they understand the word combat, what it means, and boxes. And that's why I put the boot on the logo. So there's boots there and then the American flag underneath it. And I did. I started signing vendors that were veteran vendors, veteran-owned company vendors that have product. We have an agreement that they send me so much in product every month. And then after the first month, I start buying it from them at cost so that it's not a big value. They don't make any money off me, but I help market their promotion, promote their business. We're on our website. We do Facebook ads for them. We do all kinds of stuff to promote their business, to help drive customers to their website to buy their products. And we have their products in our boxes. So you get a sample product or you get an actual product they might have, a shirt, a can opener. You know, it could be anything that I get. I get a ton of different stuff now. But we're up to about 30 vendors now. So a lot of product and a lot of opportunities. And it's a really fun thing to do, too, because I do it every month. We send stickers. We send flyers. Yeah.
Got some right there. I'll show for anybody who ends up watching it. Get it right in front of the camera.
Yep.
There's just a couple of stickers happen to be sitting right on my desk. I got a whole bunch.
I just got more stickers in today from a couple more companies because they know that having them in the box is an opportunity for visibility for their company. So they give me their stickers and stuff, too, on top of their products. But, you know, I got a box in behind me right here. That's a box. This is a box that's getting ready to go out. I sent a mistake box. I accidentally sent the wrong stuff to a guy that I so I'm sending this box out to him today. So he'll get this in the next couple of days. But the boxes go out once a month. Every middle of the month they go out. Now we do have one-time purchase box you can buy just to get one box to test it out. We have a nonprofit box that supports one of the veteran nonprofits we pick. We have a female heroes box. It's all female veteran-owned businesses that are in that box. We have a collector's box. And that box is really cool because you'll get, like, collector items like comic books, baseball cards, autographed items, you know, all kind of different cool collectible type items. And then we also have a quarterly box where you can get a box every three months. So you can do it either monthly, once every 3 months, or you can buy a one-time box. You can also buy all our boxes as gifts and send them to a friend or family member or whatever you want to send to as a birthday gift. We also provide gift boxes for organizations that do events. Like we're in the seven-figure summit. We're going to be the box that everybody gets for being in the seven-figure summit. All their speakers are going to get a box. So we're going to send them some really nice stuff in their boxes and stuff like that. So that business kind of started, though, as a way for me to kind of help other fellow veterans. It wasn't for me to make a lot of money off it. It was more to help my fellow veterans out there that might be starting up a new company, don't have a lot of marketing or don't have a lot of money for that. I can help them market and budget their stuff. So that's what we do.
Yeah, it's great. I jumped right in when I first saw it advertised the Veterpreneur Tribe, and I was like, man, that's really cool because I'm not the kind of person that would normally get a subscription box.
Right.
A lot of them really, to me, aren't really advertised towards guys. There's a lot of them towards women. My wife gets one or two, and they're all makeup related too.
Yeah.
But you know, this I was like, this was a perfect fit. This is cool, you know, because when I find a veteran business, I bookmark it in my web browser so that if I start shopping, I've got them categorized because I'm very organized like that, but I can go shop by categories if I'm looking for something, and I try to look at that first before I go to Amazon or you know, some other company. So
we were talking about earlier, next month, hopefully in February, it'll be where now my subscribers will be able to get a list of stuff they can pick from of the different vendors that they might like, and then they can just pick they want their stuff, and then it's a boom, 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 and then that's what we'll send them in the box. So we're trying to open it up more to give our customers more of a access to what they're going to get versus just a surprise. So although I personally like the surprise, some people get really surprised when they get some stuff. Like they'll get a hat, they'll get a T-shirt, then they might get a shot glass or whatever. So it's just different things you can get. But now we've had a lot of customers reach out and say, hey, we'd like to be able to pick. I'm like, all right, so we're going to find a way to make it where that you can pick some items every month. And then we'll still probably throw some extra shit in there just because we'll throw some stuff in there just to make it, you know, bonify the box a little bit. But, yeah, that's what we're getting ready to do for that. So, yeah, I got my fingers in a lot of pots, but it's all about supporting for my fellow veterans and their families and stuff. And any way I can do it, that's what we try to do.
It's a great way for veteran business to get their stuff out there, get their name out there one way or another. I've got some stickers I'm going to be, you know, trying to send you.
That'll be great. They let people know about your podcast, yeah.
Yeah, and so it's really cool. I look forward to it. It's almost like a birthday or Christmas every single month. Like you just don't know quite what you're going to get. My kids get excited when I know that it's coming and they'll be like, hey dad, can I get the next hat? Can I wear the next hat? And I'm like, cause I mean, I wear hats, but I don't wear them all the time. So I'm like, Oh, yeah, maybe. Maybe I'll give you the next one.
There'll be a lot of hats in the next one because a buddy of mine just sent another guy some hats, and then the guy, American Trigger Pullers, they get me hats all the time because they get hat orders that don't that whatever, and they don't want to throw them away, so they just give them to me. So then I put them in the boxes.
Oh, sure. I think it came from the We the People one. I really like that one. That's
from Mountain Up, Ryan Hunt and his company.
That's a good one. But yeah, my kids really look forward to it. I think it's more exciting for them. See if there's anything you can get in there. I think they're looking for the goodies, by the way.
Yeah. Well, that's funny because I have a couple veteran that they do like kids' toys and stuff that you put in there. And I was contemplating should I put it in there. But if I make it an option for you to say, yeah, I want that because I got kids, they'll love that. You might pick that so that I can put it in your box. I mean, that's where we're getting to that now. So there'll be more choices. So you don't have to get a toy, but if you want it because you got kids, you can pick it now and then give that to your son or daughter. Yeah. So that's what we're going to be
doing. That's a good point. Yeah. They saw the buffalo jerky that came in the other day and they're like, can I try that? And I'm like, you really want to try buffalo jerky? Like,
yeah, buffalo. Yeah. Crazy Mike's jerky. He sends me, he's got ghost pepper, black pepper. He's got a lot of different flavors in there. So I try to mix it up with the different boxes we sent. I think this month he had black pepper and the barbecue, the buffalo sauce one, which is like hot wing sauce. It's like that hot wing sauce. But yeah, but kids, man, you know, you gotta love when you got kids. It's a fun thing to do to play with them, just to watch their facial expression when they're eating it. Like, yeah, okay, if you want to, go ahead. You know, but it could be. You might want to get a drink. You might want to get a drink. I'd get milk. If I were you, I'd get milk.
Yeah, might as well have it handy. You never know what's going to happen. So, but yeah, for the combat boxes and all your businesses, I've got the links. I'll put them in the YouTube description. It's better than rattling them all off because you got a few of them here that we'll put out there. But you got some great stuff going on. We'll go ahead and wrap this up, but I've got three questions I ask everybody. First one is, what would be your advice for somebody who's looking to get out of the military today?
Right now, today, I would say if you're not planning to get out, if you don't already have a plan, start making one, because transitioning out of the military is not as easy as it sounds. It's not as easy as you think. You're going to run into challenges. You know, you might have family that's going to step up for you and all that. That's all great, but your family's going to want to kick you out of the house eventually too, because they're going to be like, hey, man, you know, it's nice having you around, but damn. So I would say this, use the SkillBridge program that's in the military that you can reach out to start, maybe get an apprenticeship to make sure you're getting a certain type of job you want to find in, or the right field you want to go in, because SkillBridge has a lot of fields you can get into. Then you get to do a little apprenticeship time while you're still on active duty, and then military's still paying you, but you're working for that company because you get approved in that program. So think about SkillBridge for a way to help your transition out. That would be my biggest advice to everybody getting ready to get out.
That's a good one. Yeah. How about somebody who's, you know, 18, 19, 20 years old, and they're thinking about joining the military? What piece of advice do you have for somebody there?
Do it in a heartbeat for multiple reasons. One, it's going to give you a sense of belonging, a sense of camaraderie that you've never probably felt in your life. It's going to set you up for the rest of your life, because even if you only did 2 or 3 years and then got out, you'd have the GI Bill to go to college. So now you don't have to worry about paying for school. So it's going to help you there. You're going to get life experience you would never get anywhere else. You're going to get the opportunity to get educated while you're in the Army. You can take college classes while you're in the Army. You can get Army schools or military schools, whatever branch you decide to go in. I'm a firm believer that every kid that graduates high school that doesn't go right into college should have to go in the military, in my personal opinion, because they should have to understand what this country sacrifices for everybody who lives here. I don't think that'll ever happen, but I do think that the ones that are thinking about it should jump on the opportunity, because it is an opportunity. It's not, and it is a privilege to be a soldier or a sailor or an airman or a Marine or a Coast Guardsman. It is a privilege to do those things. And then the benefits you get from it after your service, although we as veterans sometimes feel like we get crapped on or whatever, but that's not true. Veterans get taken care of if they know how to present themselves to people and their situation, and they know how to talk to people. People help you because you did sacrifice. You did write a check that was willing to give up your life so that we could all live the way we live in this country. But I would tell any 19 or 20 year old, go, because if nothing else, that way you're not like me. I went in the military because I didn't want to go to school anymore. I was tired of school and I wanted to be like my dad, blah, blah, blah. But it changed my life. So I was good with it. I don't know if we froze. Did we freeze?
Just choose your research and stuff like that. Oh, all right. Well, yeah, my, My screen went blank for a second, and then you disappeared for a second. I don't know what that was.
Yeah, that was weird.
That's weird. That one's never happened before.
All right, so question three.
The third question here is there any, you know, nonprofits or Facebook groups or anything like that, you know, one or two that you want to give a big shout out to that you think is super valuable or helpful?
All right, so if you're a veteran out there and you're in any kind of entrepreneur status, I would suggest the Vetrepreneur Tribe, and you probably had a lot of guests on that to push that tribe. It is amazing for those of us that actually interact in it. I mean, there's so much help in there. There's so many people in there want to help you and be positive for you and support you. So that's a big one. And then depending if you're a nonprofit, in the nonprofits, there's a few nonprofit groups that I'm in. I run a nonprofit. I've been doing it for 7 years. I've been the CEO and founder. So you have to find a nonprofit that's going to benefit your community. That's what I'll tell you. Go to the irs.gov website and search a nonprofit. So you can actually break it all the way down by zip code. And then, like, literally the city of Killeen, there are 247 nonprofits registered in the city of Killeen alone. Right? 247. Now, that includes all the churches and stuff, too. But the point is, you can break it down and then start looking for what they do and see if they have a website. See if they're... So you just got to do a little bit of work if you're going to get in that nonprofit sector. But I would suggest that find a nonprofit in your local community that you could support that can make an impact on your community, because that's what's going to make your community stronger. And that's what we should all be striving for, is to make our own community stronger and healthier and safer for all our families to live in. That's what it should be about.
Absolutely. There's a mission after the mission. When you get out, and that's why I volunteer. I'm wearing my Greater Peoria Honor Flight shirt right now. I'm proud to volunteer there. Love the mission. Send the vets to DC. But just, you know, get out and get involved, donate, find the nonprofits. There's nothing more than volunteering and giving back.
And honestly, your time is more valuable than your money. Your money is important. Nonprofits and your money, but they need volunteers more than anything. They need support, physical people, bodies showing up, because. Like me, my staff is mostly women, and they're mostly older women, so they don't have the physical strength to do a lot of stuff that we need to get done. So having young men come in and volunteer helps us a ton, because now we can move stuff, we can lift stuff, we can, you know, and that's great. So just remember that there's more that you can. You don't have to worry about how much money you can give them. You can worry about giving them some of your time, and that's going to make just as big of an impact as giving them money. So just remember that if you're out there listening.
Absolutely, yeah. There's always a need for bodies somewhere to do something. So
always.
Great advice, and Nick, it was great to catch up with you and get to know more about the things that you've got going on, and which is an absolute ton for your local area there. So good to know that the soldiers down there, hopefully they've got the leadership that are taking care of them. If not, they've got somebody in their corner that's there to fill those gaps and help them out. So it takes a lot of stress off people, because we all know there's a lot of stress when you serve between deployments and TDY schools and taking care of your family and all that stuff. So thank you so much for what you're doing for the people down there. And, you know, if anybody's got any interest, I'll have all the links in the YouTube description. So,
and you guys can definitely reach out to me. You can reach out to Keith and get hold of me. You can shoot us an email at the website and all that stuff. So if you run it, you got questions for you personally, you can definitely find me on Facebook or Instagram. And then you can DM me there, and I can message you back, and we can start a conversation if you need to hear from me. But thanks for having me on, Keith.
Yep. No problem. Thanks for being here.